The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Money FM 89.3, best of the breakfast huddle. The week ahead with CNBC on Money FM 89.3.
Money FM 89.3. Good morning. It's the Breakfast Huddle with Bharati Jagdish, finance presenter Ryan Huang and Adrian Abraham.
Time to check in with our friends from CNBC to look ahead to the week to see what's on the radar for investors among the developments. Commodity prices going through a slump. We're joined by CNBC's Will Kalouris, who'll first actually expand on the Fed's FOMC meeting this week. I understand, Will, this is in focus. What precisely are you watching and looking out for?
Yeah, this is going to be an absolutely interesting one. There was obviously this huge expectation, guys, that we were going to see some kind of movement when it did come to tapering by the Fed. And even if you're just looking at some of their language and some of the signaling that was coming from some of the Fed chairs just a couple of short weeks ago and now, but we have seen this, I suppose, exacerbation of the Delta outbreak in the United States. It's obviously crimped sentiment. We saw, yes, retail sales came up by 0.7% for the last month, but that was after a downward revision that we actually did see in July. We saw the weaker than expected jobs data coming through. So now there has been a lot of chattering amongst market economists and people that are closely watching the market and, I suppose, bets at the same time, that perhaps the Fed might not necessarily signal that there's going to be an inherent taper this time around, and they're not going to perhaps move, but only just, I suppose, signal ahead that there could be tapering to come perhaps in November, but it isn't necessarily going to be at this meeting like a lot of people were indeed were expecting. We could also see a little bit of movement on the dot plots, but that will only be relatively minor. So it just depends on what all of this and just how strong of a signal that they do send on their $120 billion or so of QE that we do look at the traction on the 10-year, because obviously if we do see any kind of hard, comprehensive, this is when the tapering is going to occur, the action that we might then see on the 10-year and the bonds, and then obviously what that does to the risk-free, and then you could potentially see a continuation of a little bit of a downward run on a lot of those growth stocks that a lot of people do indeed like. So it's going to be an interesting one to watch in that respect, and just how fearful the Fed is on this ongoing Delta outbreak in the United States, how much of an economic depression it will have. Because obviously you've got to remember at the same time that all of this is coming with all of that forward momentum that we have been seeing on Biden's $3.5 trillion infrastructure bill. So you've kind of got this offset occurring at the same time with all of the, I suppose, exuberance on what this infra deal is going to mean, how much money is going to be pumped into the system, while at the same time the Fed's basically, I suppose, in a sense, cooling its jets in terms of some of the assistance that it's been providing on the monetary side or the expectation that it will do that. So that, I suppose, inherently what we will be watching for coming up this week when it does come to the Fed.
Well, let's talk about all things submarines now. Last week we heard about, you know, Australia, US, the UK and France. This ahead of a Quad meeting and UN General Assembly. What can we look out for this week?
This is going to be a continuation of the mess that we are currently seeing. I'm not sure how much people have been watching this in Singapore, but I can tell you that there has been an incredible spat between the French government and its supposed allies in the United States and Australia as well. They've been absolutely incensed at the fact. So just to give that context, what they're incensed about, Australia had a $90 billion Australian deal with France's Naval Group to build out 12 Barracuda-class submarines. With this new AUKUS alliance that Australia basically hoodwinked the rest of the world and kept it relatively tight in terms of that partnership now in the Indo-Pacific with the US, the UK and Australia, they've torn up that contract with Naval Group. So that $90 billion goes to the sidelines, and now Australia is going to be looking to get nuclear-propelled submarines coming by the way of the US and potentially in the interim some leasing agreements with either the US or the UK for their nuclear subs. France, not pleased at all. Our Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, is actually on his way to the United States now for the Quad meetings and for the UN General Assembly. He's going to go to New York first, have a chat with President Biden. But at the same time, both from the top of France, Emmanuel Macron is supposed to be having discussions with Biden about this. Basically, they're characterizing this as stab in the back. This isn't how you necessarily conduct diplomacy. instances and how you treat an ally. So it raises all of these interesting questions about the diplomatic relationship, not only from the transatlantic side, from the US to France, but also Australia and France, and whether or not it can be smoothed out. And it just harkens back to a similar situation when this France deal was actually signed in 2016, because Australia turned down Japan's offer to build out those same submarines that are now having the contract cut. But then you've got to look at all of the, I suppose, the elephant in the room, but it's not necessarily the elephant, but China and their reaction to all of this, because a lot of Southeast Asian countries are now worried that this is just going to further antagonize China and then lead to some kind of an arms race, in a sense, but at the same time also lead to more aggressive posturing from China, particularly in the South China Sea, particularly in the Taiwan Strait, because of what this new alliance then assumes about the increased force posture of the United States and the United Kingdom in the Indo-Pacific, and all of the things that they're giving Australia, not just the submarines in terms of that technology, but the US is giving Australia Tomahawk missiles, ground to air strike capabilities. They're going to bring more troops into Australia. They're going to be deploying their nuclear submarines here in Australia. So there's just a lot of moving parts, and the geopolitical and geostrategic does then, you know, have an impact on, I suppose, the sentiment, the broader sentiment when it does come to the market, if there was to be any worsening of all of these relationships in one, plus, obviously, like we mentioned, the France and the United States relationship that was already a little bit on thin ice at the moment.
Hey, we're talking about submarines. Prices are underwater when you look at commodities so far. In fact, they are going through quite a bit of a slump this morning. Will, what's happening in this space, and how much does the property jitters in China play a part?
Massively. Massively. Evergrande, that debt risk is absolutely huge, but it's like a confluence of factors, I suppose, when you look at, if we're just singling out iron ore from this example, because of the fact that this is the one that has had the severe price action. You're looking at from 233 odd a ton back in May. Right now we're sitting at 101. If that, when the Dalian opens, we should see some further pressure to the downside when it does come to that Jan 22 contract. But if you think about it, when you look at the numbers, to then get, a grasp of how the Evergrande story does play into it. Obviously, yes, China has said that they're going to cut their steel production, that their curbs are going to be in place for the end of this year. They're trying to get back to 2020 levels for steel production. That's obviously going to depress the iron ore price because there's less steel demand. But then you've got to factor in that around about 30 to 35% of the steel total that gets produced in China goes to the real estate market. So if you have Evergrande collapse, maybe it doesn't collapse, maybe they have to curb significantly, maybe they get a bailout even from the Chinese government, but you've got to assume that they're not going to have the same kind of growth impulse that they had previously. So they're not going to be building as much. Like, that has to be an assumption. That's what's playing into this price activity that you're seeing. But then you've also got to think that now that we heard, I think it was on Thursday or Friday, China's Environment and Ecology Ministry, basically what they were suggesting is that these cuts, these impositions on production aren't necessarily just going to be looked at until the end of this year, but they also want to carry that through from October to March. They're going to be doing quite severe, testing of air quality. They're going to be going and doing their examinations for around about 64 regions in China, especially in the north. If you've ever been to the north of China, particularly in winter, the smog is absolutely unbearable. I've done that multiple occasions. It's not your friend. So because of the Beijing Winter Olympics, they're also looking to curb the production during that period in order to ensure the air quality. And it's exactly the same thing that they did during 2008 for the Beijing Olympics. So you're seeing iron ore getting absolutely cracked on this. And the interesting thing is, though, it might just look like iron ore pressure, but you've also got to remember that all of the industrial materials that go into the property sector, even, for example, copper, because you've got copper wiring, all of these demand impulses are at risk. Yes, right now we are seeing a little bit of a run on aluminium because of the Guinea coup, but at the same time there's been like power shutdowns in China, so obviously they're not producing as much aluminium. But with Evergrande, everyone has to be looking at Evergrande, because if something does go wrong and they do completely default and there's a complete lack of a bailout from the Chinese government, this will hit commodities hard because of the risk of contagion. You don't want that knock-on effect, and I think that's something that the Chinese government's looking at right now, because this could have a severe impact on the commodity market moving forward. Maybe it's positive in a sense for them because it drives down the prices, but everybody should be watching what happens with Evergrande. If you're any kind of miner, this is exactly your main focus moving forward, because this is the unknown. We know China's going to do what it's going to do about curbs because they've signaled it, but this is the risk.
Indeed, ripple effects across the entire ecosystem, supply chains and so on. Thank you so much, Will, for that update.
Problem.
Will Kalouris of CNBC joining us this morning on Money FM 89.3.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.